But first to a new dynamic that's emerging in the Middle East and from that critical entity, Iran. Its loquacious president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, has this week said he will take up US President Barack Obama's offer for direct talks. Now, there's all sorts of speculations as to what's behind this. Why should he be ready to talk right now, virtually on US terms, in full view, not quiet, concealed, second-track diplomacy? Is it because his arch-rival, the reformist and pro-Western former President Mohammad Khatami, has announced his candidacy for the upcoming presidential elections? Or is it the result for once of effective behind-the-scenes US diplomacy that Condoleezza Rice was championing? Well, my first guest today, a Tehran-born author and journalist, feels that the lack of meaningful relations between Iran and the US has brought little advantage to either nation. Humam Majid served as advisor and translator to both President Ahmadinejad and Khatami. He's the author, too, of a cultural overview of modern Iran called The Ayatollah Begs to Differ. Welcome to the program, Humam. How would you characterise what have looked like pretty seismic shifts in the Iranian mood over recent weeks and months?
Well, I think that the seismic, it's not as seismic as it may appear right now, because we're hearing a lot of news from Tehran about what Ahmadinejad has said. But the reality is that since about a year ago, and actually Ahmadinejad even before that, have made a lot of offers to have an opening of dialogue with the United States. I mean, continually. It hasn't been as reported as it has been recently. But it's always been, we're ready to speak to America as long as it's on a basis of respect, mutual respect, as long as it's no preconditions. With George Bush having left office now and the idea of preconditions going away, I think there's a sense in Iran that there's an opportunity to, you know, push for negotiations, you know, as soon as possible before the opportunity is lost.
But it certainly proves what a lot of good Iran watchers have been saying, that this is a volatile country, or a country of great movement, actually its people ready more than a lot of other countries to really join the West on the West's terms, as it were. Like, you know, want to be friends with the West.
Does I don't think there's any question, yes, yes.
So that it's not this monolith that is, I mean, Ahmadinejad himself and the way he speaks, very strong, strident language about Israel, for instance, and Jewish people. That is just not the way we should judge Iran? Question?
Oh, no, absolutely not. First of all, Ahmadinejad's rhetoric is horrific to most people in Iran, particularly the stuff about the Holocaust. In terms of Israel, a lot of Iranians have a lot of sympathy for the Palestinian cause. So even though his rhetoric is very inflammatory, basically, you know, support for the Palestinians in Iran runs high. And yes, in terms of wanting to reach out to the West or wanting to be, part of the Western community of nations, absolutely. And that's across the board. That's even amongst many of the Ayatollahs. They recognize that that's very important for the future of Iran. Mm. I mean, Ayatollah Khamenei, who is the supreme leader of Iran, who sets foreign policy, actually sets all policy, basically, and is the ultimate leader, himself, he said as recently as 6 months ago that he had never said that relations with the United States should be broken forever. And he said, when the time is right, we will act.
The Supreme Leader also said that they would never be the country that first started a war. And the implication is in terms of obliterating Israel. Mind you, the Israelis don't seem to believe that, do they?
No, the Israelis don't seem to believe that, or at least it's politically prudent for them to not believe that at this point, or at least pretend that they don't believe that. I actually think the Israelis know full well that Iran is not going to start a war with Israel anytime, even if it were to have nuclear weapons. It would be insanity, and if they're anything, they're not insane, the Ayatollahs.
Humam, if talks do go ahead, what do you think this would realistically mean for U.S.-Israel relations?
I think in every concept of a grand bargain that's been discussed, even the letter that Iran sent in 2003 unofficially to the Swiss ambassador to the Bush administration, included in it the idea of discussing Iran's support for Hamas and Hezbollah. But I think in terms of a grand bargain, there is going to have to be an Israeli-Palestinian component to that grand bargain. Iran views itself as having supported the Palestinian cause financially and morally, if not militarily. They won't admit to military support. And I think for them not to be included at the table when there is a grand discussion about the future of Palestine is going to be something that Iran has a lot of influence over. Despite the rhetoric, right now Iran is talking about a one-state solution, whereas everyone else is talking about a two-state solution. And of course Hamas talks about a one-state solution. But that's a bargaining position. That doesn't mean that they come to the table that they cannot agree to a two-state solution.
It'll just be interesting, won't it? I want to quote you from something from one of our papers, the Sydney Morning Herald this week. It said, if the government that emerges in Israel is even more determined to end the Iranian nuclear program by any means necessary, Mr. Obama may find himself trying to negotiate with one of America's most determined adversaries while restraining one of its closest allies. Do you agree?
That's partially true, yes. I think that he's going to have to restrain the Israelis. If the Israelis really believe that whoever becomes prime minister, and if they really believe that they will have to go to the last resort and bomb Iran's nuclear facility, I think President Obama is going to have a tough time restraining the Israelis. And if he doesn't, it's not a good, it won't be good. The results won't be good. And I think that, but I'm hopeful that he will be able to. And I'm hopeful that even if it's Benjamin Netanyahu, who seems to be the one most keen on bombing these Iranian facilities, if diplomacy doesn't work within the next 9 or 10 months, is basically what he said, that President Obama would have the ability to restrain him from doing so. And by the way, this idea that Iran must be stopped by any means is kind of preposterous, because you can't bomb knowledge away from the people. And right now, Iran has the knowledge, basically.
Could we move on to the changing face of the politics in Iran in this dramatic development this week of the reformer, Mohammad Khatami, standing in the presidential election campaign and turning it, as one website says, into an Armageddon between reformists and hardliners? Is that how you see it, or something like that?
President Khatami, you know, I'm a relative of his, so I've spent a lot of time with him. And when I last saw him in Tehran in September, at that point, there was even a lot of talk about him joining the race. I think that Ahmadinejad has failed in many of his policies, most specifically in his economic policies.
Yes.
And people are blaming his administration. Now, in terms of foreign policy, people are also blaming his rhetoric for having caused partly the economic crisis. If the sanctions are worse now than they were before, it's partly because of his rhetoric. It's not really an Armageddon, I think, between reform versus hardliner, because there are many, many hardliners, at least conservatives at a minimum, who are very much against Ahmadinejad.
Well, indeed. That was my next question. There is a possibility, I read, that a powerful politician by the name of Ali Larijani might stand against him in what amounts to a challenge from within.
I doubt it very much at this point. I think that Ali Larijani, who is now the Speaker of Parliament, is a very, very powerful man in that position. But apart from that, he's a very powerful man because of his very, very close relationship with the Supreme Leader. He has run in the presidential elections before and has come in, in a rather poor finish, like sixth or fifth or whatever. I don't think that he's going to run this time, and the indications are that he's not. Doesn't mean he won't at the last minute, but if he does, it would definitely split the conservative vote and would almost certainly hand Khatami a victory, because the reformists have basically agreed that they're going to have rally around one candidate.
Are they? That they're not likely to have a range of them standing?
There won't be a range of reform candidates, certainly not. There might be a couple of minor candidates who fall into the reform side who won't take enough votes away from Khatami. But the sense that I got in September when I was in Iran was everybody was talking about basically the pragmatists, even the pragmatists on the conservative side and the reformers banding together to back one candidate. And that one candidate, especially if it was going to be Khatami, would be a powerful one that they could all agree on, including people like Rafsanjani.
Where is he, the great wily old politician that he is?
The wily old politician has been basically supportive of Khatami's bid, and he's very much, he appears to be very much against Ahmadinejad and his policies. And this is a good opportunity for him to, first of all, get back at Ahmadinejad for defeating him in the last election, and having someone in charge that he believes is more pragmatic, such as Khatami. He may not agree with Khatami on every social issue or every political issue, but he's certainly more to his liking than Ahmadinejad is. And Rafsanjani is very much in favor of talks with the West, very much in favor. Under his presidency, Iran's detente with Europe began. So he's very much a pragmatist.
Oh, yes. I think he's fascinating to watch, Rafsanjani. Look, I just can't let you go before asking. We don't often have people on the program who've advised and translated for both two Iranian presidents, Khatami and Ahmadinejad. Just give us a pen picture of these two personalities, please.
He is genuinely a genuine reformer, someone who really wants to see some major changes in Iran. He was stymied by the hardliners and the conservatives when he was president. But I think that people are recognizing now that he did manage to accomplish quite a bit. It wasn't enough for most people. Most people had expected some really radical change.
But he is quite a sort of aloof and a bit of an elite type of man, isn't he? And Ahmadinejad is just so much more, Tammany Hall politician.
Yeah, Ahmadinejad is a street guy, and he was always a street guy, and he always will be a street guy. And when you meet him and you see him, he's charming in that street way. Mm. His language is the language of the street. Iranians recognize that. He's the neighborhood guy that you run into on the way to buying bread. I mean, he's just that guy. The way he dresses, he purposely dresses the way he does. He still buys his suits at the same suit shop that sells to every lower middle class person who ever gets, one suit, one wedding suit. That's where he buys his suits. And he refuses to have any heirs or anything like that, which I think is appealing to a lot of people. That said, people view Khatami, there's also, Iranians have a lot of pride in their culture and their, history and everything else. And there was a sense when Khatami left and Ahmadinejad came, not just among the elite, but even among some of the middle classes and even the lower classes, that Khatami's image of being this very sophisticated, educated, well-dressed man was good for Iran. So even though he's elitist, from a academic standpoint, yes, he's not an elitist from an economic standpoint. But in terms of the two characters, it couldn't be more different. One is a street guy. One is a gentleman who you'd want to have to your dinner parties. although Ahmadinejad,
he's the one who's called, of course, for a dialogue of civilizations, hasn't he? Too.
Yes. But Ahmadinejad, of course, would be great fun at a dinner party.
Oh yes,
in a different way.
As long as you weren't Jewish.
Yeah. Although no, that's another thing. He will go to great pains to tell you that he's not anti-Semitic, and we'll meet with Jewish groups, and in the Middle East, a lot of things that are viewed as and might be viewed as anti-Semitic here in terms of speaking about Israel and Zionism aren't necessarily viewed as anti-Semitic. I'm not saying they're not. I'm just saying that that's not the way they're viewed by society.
Very interesting. Look, thank you so much. We must talk to you again.
Thank you so much, Geraldine. I really enjoyed it.
That was Humun Majid. He is an advisor and translator and lively character for two Iranian presidents, as we said. He's the author of The Ayatollah Begs to Differ. It's a New York Times. It was on the New York Times bestseller list. It's a double-day publication. You might like to seek it out. Well, at just coming up to 7:45, coming up here on Saturday Extra, how should we deal with Chinese resource companies which have their sights firmly set on Australian assets going cheap at present? A great and current case study. That's next here on Saturday Extra.